My name is Laura Holt. I am 34 years old. Today is December 30th, 2018, and I'm speaking with my mother, Cheryl Catchpole, and my father, Warren Catchpole. We are recording this interview in Albany, Oregon. Okay, Mom, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
I was born in 1954 in Portland, Oregon, and our first house was the house I liked best of all the houses I lived in. It was on Chautauqua Boulevard across from Columbia Park, and it was the sixth of 10 children, and we had a lot of fun because we lived across from a park. So, and we always had friends because we had lots of siblings, and we would go over to the park and play. And it was a great park because they had a rec center where you could check out games and a big wading pool for the younger kids, and it had a swimming pool for when you were older. And I remember when I was 7 years old, I wanted to be able to go into the deep end of the pool, but they would only let you if you were certified that you could swim across the pool. And so I faked it. And I just used my arms, and I didn't really actually have my feet leave the ground. I just walked across the pool. But I was swimming with my arms. I'm sure they could tell. I wasn't actually swimming. Anyway, but I had fun doing that. And I went to Peninsula Grade School, kindergarten through third grade. And then my mom and dad divorced, and we moved to a little bit farther into North Portland, into St. John's area, and I went to James John Middle School. Well, it was no middle school, but I was there fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Anyway, and then my mom remarried to my dad, Claire Tracy, and we moved to even farther into St. John's, into North Portland, and I went to Sitton School. And went to 7th and 8th grade there, and then went to Roosevelt High School. And, I mean, there's so much you could tell about your childhood, but I don't know.
What were you like as a child?
I was always pretty easygoing. I just kind of went with the flow and did what we were doing at the time. I was one of the younger kids. So that meant my older sisters were sometimes very dictatorial and bossy. And when I was growing up, my sister Carol was especially bossy. She liked a really clean house, and us little kids were always messing it up. And so she would sometimes lock us out of the house so that she could clean it, and then she would let us back in. when I grew up, she was my best friend.
Dad, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. So I was born in Bozeman, Montana, mm-hmm. on the 26th of December, 1952. And I lived with my mom and my grandma Ethel and Finnegan. And because my mother worked as a barmaid, Grandma and Finnegan took care of me, and I bonded at a very early age with Grandma and Finnegan. And spent probably the first 2 or 3 years of my life in Bozeman, Montana. And then my mother married Gordon Catchpole, AKA Goo, sometime, I'm thinking in 1954 or 55, and it wasn't too long after they married that Grandpa Goo joined the railroad, or took a job on the railroad as a telegrapher, and that resulted in us moving quite a bit. And I'm not sure exactly why, but apparently the life of a telegrapher on the railroad was a vagabond life. And so Ma and Goo purchased a Spartan trailer house or mobile home that they could pull behind the car, and away we went. And Grandpa Goo took his telegrapher training in Salt Lake City, so we spent some time in Salt Lake City. And then after he graduated from telegrapher school, then we moved to the Eugene, Oregon area, and he worked in Eugene, he worked in Coos Bay, he worked in Myrtle Point, he worked in a whole bunch of different places, and it seemed like every place we parked the trailer house, it was very close to the railroad tracks. And I don't know if that's because he worked for the railroad or because that's where the parks, the trailer parks were that you'd park these kind of trailers. And we did that, we moved around. Every summer we'd go back and we'd visit Grandma and Finnegan, and that was the world's greatest for me because I just loved my Grandma and Finnegan so much. And there was a period of time when they moved out of the big city of Belgrade, Montana, out into a farm probably 5 to 7 miles outside of Belgrade. And it was like a ranch. They had some chickens and they had some other farm animals, and Finnegan built a log cabin, believe it or not. And this was in the mid to late 1950s. And here we are out there without any running water, without any electricity, with an outhouse. My job was to talk to the chickens every night to make sure they'd go to sleep. And it was my job to feed the chickens in the morning and to take care of the ducks and chase the rabbits. And I thought that was the world's greatest place to live, and I loved that. And then I'd have to go back with my mom and dad back to living in the trailer house. We did that until it was time for me to start school. And I didn't start school until I was 7 years old because my mom wanted to keep me around the house. And that was fine with me. And so I started school in Eugene, Oregon. We lived in Eugene my first, second, and third grade years. And then in the middle of my fourth grade year, we moved to Beaverton, Oregon. We lived in Beaverton. That was fine. I enjoyed that. I had friends everywhere. And then we moved from Beaverton, Oregon, over to the West Hills of Portland, Cedar Mill area. And that was great. That's where I finished grade school. And I went to Cedar Park Junior High School. And in those days, junior high was 7th, 8th, and 9th grades. And that was great. A lot of good friends. Played football and tried to play basketball, but unfortunately didn't have the coordination or the ability to jump high enough. But I still enjoyed it. Couldn't quite climb all the way to the top of the long rope that they had used in PE to see how strong somebody was and how small the rear ends were, what that ratio was. And I could get maybe 5 or 6 feet, and then I'd But it was great, had a good time. And then I went to Sunset High School my sophomore year, and then transferred over to Tigard High School because my mom and dad, they built a very nice home in the West Hills of Portland, out in the Beaverton area. But my dad read this article in U.S. News and World Report that said, owning a home isn't really a good idea because you have to pay property taxes on it and you have to pay interest on the loan, and it doesn't make any sense. So he had the brilliant idea of going back to a manufactured home or a trailer, double wide trailer house. It didn't bother me that much, but my sisters were mortified at the thought. So my dad purchased that, sold the house we were living in. Unfortunately, he didn't realize he wasn't living in Great Falls, Montana anymore, and Oregon had zoning laws, and so he had a trailer house on his hands, but no real idea of where he was going to put it. He eventually struck a deal with a strawberry farmer out in Tualatin, Oregon, and that's where they moved the trailer house out there in the middle of the strawberry fields. And so I finished up at Tigard High School. I did my junior and senior years at Tigard High School. Tormenting my two younger sisters was one of my favorite pastimes. That was great. That was a great and fun part of my childhood. Screwing around, having fun, maximizing my fun was always an objective I had. My feelings for my Graham and Finnegan were always very deep. And even as a college student, I would go back during the summer and I would spend a few days with them. Mm-hmm. And that was special for them and it was special for me. And I would say, as I reflect back on my childhood, I would say it was always fun. I always felt loved. And Ma and Goo were great parents. I was blessed to have great grandparents. And I reflect back with great fondness on my friends and the activities I had. School was always great, and I have no regrets.
That's great.
What advice would you give to your teenage self, Cheryl?
I would tell my teenage self what I figured out a year into high school, and that was, don't worry about being popular, just do the very best you can to prepare for your future. Like, have good friends that you can hang out with and do fun things with, but teenage years are to strengthen your testimony and prepare for not living at home anymore, to prepare for going to college and becoming the most awesome adult, because you're only a teenager for a couple years, and sometimes people let that define themselves. Too many people define themselves by what happens during high school, when actuality is that high school is just a blip on your life. You're an adult and you're independent for 50, 60 years. It's, you know, you're a teenager for six. So use that time to just really develop who you are and develop lots of interests and be active and busy in extracurricular activities and find out what you like and who you want to be, and then just work your little heart out so you can be that person. And then when you're an adult and you're on your own, you're going to have a blast. For 60 years, you'll have a blast. So, and just don't make any decisions when you're a teenager that you will regret forever.
Warren, what advice would you give to your teenage self?
There are a few things that come to mind immediately. Number one, realize as a teenager that the first girl you date and you really fall in love with will most likely not be the person that you're going to spend eternity with. So be prepared for some heartache and some disappointment, right? And don't allow yourself to go head over heels in love. So brace yourself for the fact that you're going to have several relationships, and you want to learn from each one of them, and that would be the first thing I would offer up as advice. Second thing I would offer up as advice would be do well in math. Okay. The third thing I would offer up as advice would be have a plan. Okay. So take seriously the fact that your teenage years are preparatory in nature, and the idea should be that you should use that time to kind of get a reasonably good idea of what you want to do with your life. You don't have to nail it down completely, but you should have a general idea. What kind of future do you want to have for yourself? Do you see yourself as a professional? Do you see yourself as a craftsman? Do you see yourself getting additional education? Do you see yourself, potentially joining the military? Just get a sense of the kind of future you want. And make sure that once you get a general idea, then map out a plan. And the plan should include things like, okay, if I see myself with a certain kind of future, what kind of educational requirements might that involve, and what kind of commitment do I have to make? pay particular attention to understanding what's the income potential associated with what I want to be. For example, when I was a teenager, I thought I wanted to be an archaeologist. That was fine, but it wasn't until I did a little bit of research and I found out archaeologists don't make very much money, and I thought I wanted to get married and I wanted to have children, and I realized if you get married and you have children, that can be costly, and so then I had to take a look at what an archaeologist would make, and I decided being an archaeologist was a nice hobby, but didn't make sense as a vocation. So I was able to strike archaeologist as something that I was interested in. So that's an example of what I'm talking about. So differentiate as early as you can between a hobby and a vocation / profession. That would be advice that I would give you. The next bit of advice would be always vote Republican. And then the next bit of advice that I would give you is that you want as early and as soon as you possibly can to make some decisions relative to your faith. Because the earlier your life is faith-based, the better it will be. For me specifically, that resonates because when I was a teenager, I didn't think very much about God at all. And it wasn't until later that I was introduced to the LDS Church, and it resonated with me. And my great regret was that I hadn't been introduced to it earlier, because I really hadn't thought about it. And I, you know, reflect back even now at what my life would have been had I, you know, had those LDS values and been a member of the LDS Church as a teenager. I would have made better, healthier choices because I would have had a faith-based foundation. So that's some of the advice that I would give to my descendants as they're and when they're teenagers.
Mom, how has your life been different than how you imagined it would be when you were young?
When I was young, we lived in a really strongly blue-collar area of Portland, and I used to hear in church all the time about people saying, you know, I thought that when I got older I'd have a job and get rich and have all this stuff and make a house and whatnot. And so all my life I kind of had this feeling that when you're young you have lofty dreams and ideals, but no one ever actually gets them. And then when I was older and I met your dad, and we would drive around and look at nice neighborhoods, and he'll say, someday we'll have a house like that. I go like, no, we won't. People say that, but they don't actually do it. And he goes, no, I'm serious, we will. And so that's something I never thought. I thought that I would always live in Portland and my life would be very understated. And instead, you know, your dad got a good education. He's a talented business person. So we did have a nice house and we did live in nice neighborhoods. I thought that I would be very uncomfortable living in a nice neighborhood that I would not ever fit in. But that wasn't the case at all. The other people were just like me. And so that turned out very different than what I expected. I never grew up with doing a lot of sports, and so I didn't realize how involved our family would be in sports, but I loved it really a lot, so that was really great. And then the one thing that did happen that I thought would happen was staying strong in the church. That was a conscious choice. I always knew that I would be close to the church, so that was a good thing, but I didn't realize that we'd have such a comfortable life.
Dad, how has your life been different than how you imagined it would be when you were young?
Oh man, it's radically different. When I was young, my life was not faith-based, so I wasn't a member of the LDS Church. I wasn't even sure there was a God, right? So for me, my objectives were all very materialistic. I always believed that I would get married. I never imagined it would be to a redhead. I'd never dated a redhead. And so when your mother hip-checked me into the drinking fountain and I encountered a redhead for the first time, I was quite smitten. So I knew I'd get married, but there's no way in Hades I ever thought I was going to have five kids. I thought maybe two or three. I never imagined not being an attorney. I wanted to be an attorney. I planned on being an attorney. And I wanted to be an attorney for two reasons. Reason number one is I felt like I could make a significant income. Reason number two was I thought I could parlay being an attorney into a political role of some sort. I always wanted to be a conservative Republican politician, and that was my view. I knew I'd get married. I thought I'd have a few kids, not five, maybe two or three. I was convinced I was going to be an attorney. I was convinced that life was all about accumulating as much as I could possibly accumulate. I always wanted to take care of my family, and I always wanted to do well, but I just wanted to do well because I respected people that did well and had a lot of stuff. And so that's what I fully expected. And then I joined the church. And all of a sudden, I had a foundation. It was faith-based foundation. And my priorities changed radically. While I still wanted to be very successful, and I wanted to make as much money as I could, as fast as I could, I wanted to do so for the right reasons, and it wasn't to drive the biggest, fanciest car. It wasn't to own a mansion. It wasn't to travel the world. It wasn't to show off. It was to support my family first and foremost, and to be in the position to help others and to contribute to society. All of a sudden, it opened up the possibility of having more than two or three children. Even though I didn't know exactly how many we'd end up with, I was very open to having more, and we were blessed with more children. All of a sudden, instead of having just a temporal view of life, I realized there was a lot more, and I needed to have a more long-term, eternal view, and that drove decisions like making commitments in the temple and having my life very much influenced by my faith, and that has resulted in being married to the same beautiful lady for what will be 44 years in June, having five great kids, having nine grandchildren, although I'm sure more on the way, probably living in a much smaller home than I ever imagined, but sufficient for our needs, and deriving great joy from my life. And so, contrasting my life prior to and what it turned out to be the pivot point for me was my decision to join the church. So I never became an attorney, okay? But I selected what I think is a much better alternative. I had more kids than I thought I would ever have. Maybe I don't have all the toys or the material goods that I thought I was going to have, but I feel like I'm a much richer person for the decision. So those are some of the major differences between how it is and how I thought it was going to be.
Cheryl, thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Is there any wisdom or advice that you'd like to share?
Well, the only thing that really is of most value is that they're members of the church and that they're strong in their faith and they're not just like going to church, but actually believe and have full confidence in the great plan of happiness and that Jesus Christ is our Savior. That's the only thing that really matters, and everything else comes from that. So I hope and pray that every one of them will be faithful members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that they truly live their life as close to the commandments as possible, understanding the power of the atonement to help them to change and to be the best that they could be so that they can prepare for eternal life, because everything is about family and supporting each other, and so that we can all be together forever and actually want to be together forever and see each other and support each other and be there for each other. And so that's, you know, my hope and dreams and prayers are all so that everyone will be strong members of the gospel and living really good faith-based lives.
Great. Warren, thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing that they may hear this recording, is there anything you want to say to them? Is there any wisdom or advice you'd like to share?
Yes. Number one, thinking about the temporal as opposed to the spiritual, the advice I would give them relative to the temporal is they need to take care of their physical bodies. What I mean by that is they need to exercise on a regular basis, be careful about what they eat, because there is no pill that they can take. I'm betting even when they listen to this many, many years into the future, there's not going to be a pill. Requires some hard work and some commitment. So take care of your body. That's advice relative to the temporal. Second thing relative to the temporal is prepare for the future. Get, you know, regardless of what you decide you want to be the best you can be at that particular thing, and figure out what's required in order to make that happen. Is it education? Is it, you know, an apprenticeship? Whatever it is, make sure you do it so you can maximize that. Number three, relative to the temporal, make sure you save as much as you can. Whether it's a 401k or just a regular savings plan, set money aside, because one day, I promise you that are listening to this recording, you're going to get older and you're not going to want to work for your entire life, so you better have some savings set aside. So manage your finances. It's critically important. Number four, you're going to fall in love, I promise you. And before you make the decision to get married, I really want you to think about it and pray about it and make sure that that person is the kind of person that you're going to want to spend eternity with. So be very, very judicious. Be very, very cautious and careful. Make sure it's an inspired decision, because eternity is just that. It's forever. And I want you to keep that in mind. Fifth bit of advice I'll give you relative to the temporal is it's okay to be rich. Don't ever let anyone tell you it's not okay to be rich. It's okay to be rich if your objective is to be rich for the right reasons. Don't fall in love with the idea of being rich so you can be like Ebenezer Scrooge, just hoard your money and lord over people and be greedy and selfish and grasping. That's and be able to buy the best toy in the world so you can show it off. That's not the reason to be rich. The reason to be rich is you do it for the right reasons. You accumulate the resources that you need to take care of yourself and your family, and you have surplus to help other people with. The nice thing about being a member of the church is you have an opportunity to use an existing, very authentic and powerful organization to funnel your surplus funds through, so you know and can have confidence that they'll be used correctly and appropriately and according to the Lord's plan. So those are five things I want you to know relative to temporal matters. Now, relative to spiritual, I want you to know that it's critically important that you differentiate between being a cultural member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and a real, sincere, faith-based member. Absolutely important. And what I want you to be is I want you to be a faith-based member, where it's not simply a matter of going to church every Sunday, but I want you to internalize it and I want it to drive your behavior. Second thing I want to counsel you relative to spiritual matters, and it kind of relates a little bit to, you know, picking the right person. Make sure that when you pick the right person, make sure you're married in the temple for time and all eternity, and make sure you honor those commitments and those covenants and be faithful to that person. That's critically important. Number three, and this relates to spiritual as well as temporal, don't wait until you can afford to have children. Because if you wait until you can afford it, guess what? You'll never feel like you can. So I would counsel you to have children, pray about it, and be open to it as early as possible. One of the things I've always been grateful for is that Mom and I made the decision that even though we couldn't afford it, we were going to move forward and have children young, and I'm grateful because if you have your children young, then when they give you grandchildren, you'll be old enough to enjoy them and be able to do things with them, and that has been our experience, and I would highly recommend that. Always remember, this will be the final thing, a bit of advice I'll give you. Always remember to honor your covenants and your commitments, and make sure that you deliver on the promises you make to your friends, your spouse, and the Lord. And the commitments that you'll make in the temple are critical and essential to your eternal well-being. Make sure that you honor those, you remember those, and you do everything you can constantly do to strengthen your testimony and make sure you honor those commitments and follow through. If you do these things, these temporal things and these spiritual things, you will be happy in mortality and also throughout the eternities. And the final thing I would add is to all of my grandsons, if a redheaded lady hip checks you into the drinking fountain, I want you to pay particular attention.